2010, new and really improved Digesting Politics. I'm Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Lehrer. Hi, Andrea. Here we are again, Brian Lehrer with WNYC's Andrea Bernstein. Last year, remember, Andrea, we were the new and improved Digesting Politics because we added Bob Henley.
And now we are 25% more with Ozzie Papera. Yay.
We really improved Digesting
really,
Politics.
Really, really improved Digesting Yay. Politics.
So I thought maybe we should do a kind of introducing Ozzie little section to start out, because people who are really inside, you know that you worked for the New York Observer, and not only in the paper, but you've been blogging for them for a while. So Ozzie, why don't you tell our listeners what you came to WNYC to do and what your blog is all about.
That's a great question, and I'm not sure if I can fully answer it at this point. But it's basically a continuation of what I've been doing at The Observer, which is chronicling almost in real time the political developments that are happening and sort of speaking to the audience and speaking with the audience in a way that reporters speak to each other, informed, engaged, intelligent, and really sharp about what's happening.
How many times a day do you blog?
How many times a day do you want to blog? I would say about 18.
It depends. I mean,
this is an exaggeration. It's an ongoing conversation.
Well, this is, you know, for people who were, people say, you know, oh, you work in radio. When are you on? Well, I start at 10 o'clock and I end at noon. But
well, I guess with the blog, like, it's like a microphone that's turned on at, you know, 8 or 9 in the morning, sometimes earlier, and it gets turned off sometimes around 8 or 9 at night. And if something happens at a debate or an event, you turn the microphone back on. So it's kind of like continuously on.
Yeah, right. Oh, we're always on at, you know.
Always on.
At the Ozzie blog. We really are always on. This is, by the way, is it still a slogan of the Takeaway? It used to be a slogan of the Takeaway. We're always on at the Takeaway. But Ozzie is really always on 24/7. And so while we're talking about Ozzie's blog, we should mention that you can find that on the homepage at WNYC.org. And can I say the other thing about Ozzie that's interesting?
Yeah.
Like you, Ozzie's from Queens. Did you know this?
Well, we went to the same high school.
What?
Didn't we?
Or college, I think.
Well, did you go to Bayside High School?
I was zoned for it. And around 92, when I should have been going there, New York City was a much different place. And for a number of reasons, I decided to go to a private school, Archbishop Molloy, which is the school of Andrew Cuomo, Ray Kelly.
Andrew Cuomo, perfect segue.
Yes,
okay,
there we go.
Yay!
2010.
We went to the same high school.
You went to the same high school as Andrew Cuomo.
A few different years, but I am still trying to find a yearbook with his photo in it.
Oh, well, so. Good luck with that. I mean, it's almost as easy as finding him out on the campaign trail, right? I mean, actually, we're going to be posting on the WNYC news page shortly a map that producer Richard Yeh has put together of where Cuomo has been, because this has been, for everybody who doesn't know, like Cuomo's like sort of RV tour, but
right.
It's very different in certain essential ways from previous tours. Like when Spitzer did his version of this, he was on a bus with all of us. We were on the same bus as him. And he even like took the press corps to his ranch for a barbecue with Silda and the girls, like all sort of very weird in retrospect.
It's like John McCain in 2000.
Right, but exactly. It was like the, you know, everybody had their version of the Straight Talk Express. I don't think Spitzer had a name. But anyway, Cuomo is completely different. It's sort of in a different parallel universe because he's out in an RV, but there's no press van. He's going to tiny population centers, like a place I don't even know existed. I had to go Google map it the other day. Greenwich, New York. Did you know that there was a Greenwich, New York?
No comment.
I didn't know there was a Greenwich, New York.
And yeah.
I have driven around New York. I know a lot of the state. But very small places away from media centers, hard-ish to get to unless you live there. And it's sort of interesting, you know, and Ozzie, I would love to know what you think about this, but I just, to have a sort of tour where you're really sort of pushing off the press.
Well, it's kind of a great metaphor, and caution me if I'm reading too far into this, but he doesn't have press on this van. He's literally driving it himself. And he's also
driving the van himself?
He's driving the RV himself. I mean, the guy has both hands on the steering wheel. I mean, this, you know, the rap about him is that
he's a car guy. He is. He does love cars.
And that he has both hands on the steering wheel at all times.
Right.
For 10 and 2.
Right? Talk about micromanaging.
Exactly. But also, they're not really informing people about when and where he's going to be stopping, which, you know, the campaign has sort of said at various, you know, turns that this is not going to be those big town halls that you saw Obama doing in 08. This is really going to meet people right on the ground, right where they are. And if we don't tell reporters, then you know, we'll tell them with enough time. But and, I'm always curious about, like, who's actually showing up.
And New York One has their Andrew Cuomo clock. I assume that's still going. How many days, weeks, months, and years since he last accepted an invitation right. to sit for an interview? But what do you think he's doing? Like, I would guess Greenwich, New York, which I never heard of either.
And it's in Columbia County,
Columbia
by the
County,
way. It's sort of almost
like
to the Massachusetts
east
border.
Of Albany.
Somewhat, no, well, it's somewhat west of east of Albany, towards the Massachusetts border.
Yeah. So, is he going to places that were identified by his pollsters as swing vote centers? I mean, or is it completely irrelevant to that because he considers himself such a shoo-in, no matter who gets the Republican nomination? You know what I mean? If I was advising him and I wanted him to stay out of the media eye but still make this drive around the state worth something, I'd say, well, where can he go where it's not so staunchly Republican right. that he doesn't have a prayer of winning any votes by going there, but, you know, where it's not
well,
so obviously Democrat, that
say,
why bother?
As we learned in the 23rd Congressional District last year, no corner of New York is so staunchly Republican that it's not worth going there, right?
Right, that's fair.
But, although that's a pretty staunch corner of New York, which is where I'm going on vacation any minute
which
now.
Which corner? Greenwich?
No, the 23rd
Greenwich?
Congressional
Who knows even
district.
How to pronounce it?
Whoa.
It's the Adirondacks.
Only Brian Lehrer would vacation in that kind of congressional district.
Wait a
district.
Second. I vacation in the Adirondacks.
Oh, my Lord.
But they,
where do you vacation?
I vacation in Queens by my mom's house.
In front of your computer, I'm sure.
But it's very staunchly Republican. I mean, the only reason a Democrat won that special election is because there was a Republican and an ultra-Republican
right.
on
true.
The ballot at the same time.
That it's true. Right. You are correct. But I don't know. I mean, I looking at this map, and I realize it's, Ozzie, it's a little unfair because Richard just sent it to me and it's not yet posted. But, right. I mean, I suppose you could make that argument. You know, Hudson Valley is sort of can be purplish, you know.
Sure. Moderate.
Congressman John Hall,
and
Democrat.
Here he is making a grand entrance.
We're on mic, Bob. Be careful.
We're on mic. Bob's here. And thank goodness. And we are talking about the Cuomo bus tour. So sit down, catch your breath.
Great.
We just started.
Live podcasting.
So, yeah.
No, can I make a promise on behalf of Digesting Politics? And, you know, you guys can back it up. I'm sure you will. That no matter how much the rest of the media says the election is a shoo-in and not for real, we will talk about it like it's for real so that we can at least take stock of the state of New York State.
And can I just point out that I do think last year in the Bloomberg-Thompson election, I feel like you and Bob and you know, Brian, the three of us, we kept saying, like, this is not really a shoo-in, and it wasn't really in the end. I mean,
right.
it was for a complicated
right.
set of reasons, but we kept saying, you know, Bloomberg is acting like somebody who thinks this race is a lot closer than we
right.
do.
And that was
so
our perception of his
I think that
behavior.
Is a fair thing.
And in Andrew Cuomo's case, does anybody think that Carl Paladino or Rick Lazio has a chance of beating him? Do they have a rationale? Do they have a rationale? Do they have an central organizing principle to their campaign?
Well, I think you might want to ask what things does Andrew Cuomo have to be careful of? Because news is
he
something
he walks
that
in, he's sweating, he doesn't realize we're in the middle of a segment.
I do.
And he jumps right into deep analysis.
Well, that's what we're here for.
yes.
I mean, you have just now, I see that the Staten Island District Attorney Republican, Dan Donovan, has had to back off from pursuing the Independence Party line because of what looks like a widening investigation of the Independence Party. That is a group that Andrew Cuomo embraced very closely to the derision of the Working Families Party, which has its own criminal investigation that it's trying to resolve. So and if you look at the campaign list of Andrew Cuomo, I mean, you just got to wonder. Everybody that wanted to kill the soda tax was on that list. All the major sugar multinational corporations. I mean, it looks like policy for hire. I mean, that's what you can't help but to wonder. And chiropractors, solid waste contractors, recyclers, real estate agents. I mean, anybody.
Hedge fund managers.
Yeah, it's just, you know,
lobbyists.
it was like dinner bell at Albany. Come on now.
Right. I mean, people always give to the person they believe that is going to be the next governor. And clearly these filings are, you know, testament that that is the conventional
wisdom. Even in
the
New York,
but I do think the question what Cuomo has to be careful of is, look, we were just talking about this. He obviously thinks he does have to be careful. He's been putting out this, you know, he puts out sometime in the evening where he's going to be.
Right.
The next day, some point north. There is no press ban. There is no schedule. There is no. And I would say that even like the most tightly controlled campaigns, like Hillary Clinton, this was a tightly controlled campaign. But I could call them up and say, you know, I need to make plans for childcare. Can you tell me where I need to be? And they would give me some indication. You know, they would say to me, for your, you know, planning only. And I would agree to that condition because I did have to plan. I mean, it's like people have to have lives. But
I'm going to use that excuse next time for childcare purposes. Can you tell me? Can you tell me where
you're
going?
Well,
I may have a child.
But it was
by
true.
Then, Ozzie will say.
But you may have one now.
For only the second time, I'll say no comment. But I do think that Bob raises a great point: is what does Andrew Cuomo have to look out for? And if you have a weak Rick Lazio campaign that gets overtaken by a well-funded Carl Paladino, you know, irrespective of the issues that Paladino is sort of espousing, which is sort of thin, he's just angry and yelling and sort of throwing out a lot of rhetoric. The perception that a lot of people will gravitate towards, and that'll have some impact, is that, wow, who is this guy? He's rising. He has momentum. And you'll see people sort of talk about, you know, the race tightening up, even if Paladino doesn't really put forward as many kind of policy issues as we'd like all these candidates to be talking about. So if there's an implosion on the Republican side, Andrew Cuomo could theoretically be hurt by it just because it'll give the impression that there is some kind of greater force moving forward.
Or tidal wave. I mean, he doesn't want to start his governorship like Bloomberg, looking like he just squeaked in. He wants to, you know, start it with a mandate. And, you know, I mean, I do think that
worked,
I mean, it's a,
that
it's
worked
a,
for the last
you know,
guy.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, it's a very nationally, it's a big Republican year, right? Republicans are gaining everywhere. You know, if you sort of only have to look at sort of last summer, the energy bill versus this summer, the energy bill. Last summer, the House passed a sweeping bill. This summer, the Senate, you know, was lucky to pass any bill with the name energy in it.
Do you think he could, though, like rebound off of that? The way the mayor has and says, look, in this horrible year for Democrats, we won and we beat expectations by, you know, 5 or 10%. So even if he comes in small without the mandate, do you think he could use the
I don't
background.
Think he wants that, though, right? I mean, nobody wants to have to make that argument.
He's talking about a kind of grassroots thing. I mean, when you read the propaganda that comes out with the bus tour at the very quickly disclosed location, you'll see that it's the rhetoric is almost like Cesar Chavez, that he is going to ignite. No, it's about a call to arms to save your state. It's about volunteerism, going forth and changing the way New York does business. And he's taken on some big targets. I mean, that speech that he gave at Rybrook, where he really set out a very ambitious agenda, talking about the thousands of state independent authorities and utilities that need to reinvent government. I mean, he set a high bar for himself. And the problem is he doesn't want to – he has to be careful that it doesn't look like the old New York backstage with a kind of phony patina of a new New York front and center.
Let's talk about the attorney general's race.
The free-for-all. Well, I was very interested. Having five Democrats, all pretty well qualified, is making for some very interesting daily news here. We so far have Nassau District Attorney Kathleen Rice saying that even though most people believe that it's the job of the attorney general to enforce all state laws, even the ones you don't like, that when it came to the ban on same-sex marriage, she would not defend the state in the event that was challenged. So that was new. And then a couple of days later, we thought that it passed, and everyone at the time, all the other candidates, Eric DiNallo, Schneiderman, and Brodsky, and former U.S. Attorney, Assistant U.S. Attorney Coffey, all said, no, you don't understand. The job is to defend the state's laws, even if you don't like them. And then former insurance superintendent DiNallo went and just joined in and said, you know what? You could find yourself in a situation where, as an act of conscience, you could decide not to defend a law. So we're into some new territory here. I've never heard that coming up before.
So is this the politicization of the attorney general's office to try to get the gay vote?
Well, I don't know. In this case, in the Denali's case, it came up around the question of when Assemblyman Brodsky brought up the question of the DEC's regs about the Marcellus Shale and the challenge of regulating natural gas extraction from the Marcellus Shale.
Around the New York City reservoirs.
Right, right. And everybody was saying, well, the idea was, so, you know, as an attorney general, you might have to sit with your client, the DEC, even if you knew they were wrong, behind the scenes and say, listen, you know, I'm going to defend you, but you're going to get your clock cleaned. In this case, it's something where you see, I think, candidates are trying to distinguish themselves in a very crowded field where the public's not paying attention yet.
I mean, I can't think. Can any of you think of an example where a previous attorney general has done that? I can't.
Of saying, I mean, that as a matter of conscience, I'm not going to
do it.
I thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Andrew Cuomo might have said that with respect to the death penalty. I mean,
I don't know if it ever was relevant when he was in, because
I think
it may
this is
have
a good
been,
a good subject for listener right. comment. Can anybody remember?
Yes.
Right. I can't.
I mean, there's
I remember
cases
Spitzer
of recusals. There's maybe cases where you have a former right. business involvement right. or mm-hmm. family where you get outside counsel. But it was very interesting to have this important debate happen about the very definition of the job title attorney general.
Well, I have to bow out, and I'm doing 9th floor green conference room. So,
were you bad?
I am out of here. Being taken to the program director's office.
Any parting? Oh, don't worry, everybody. Brian, we'll be around. And when you don't hear him on the radio tomorrow, it's not because anything happened. Tomorrow, as we're recording this, on Thursday, July 21st. 22nd. Brian has his long planned vacation. So.
But we
in the 23rd congressional district.
It's true. But here we are again, and it's a new election year, and it's going to be an unbelievable midterm nationally, and we'll be talking about
locally,
a lot of those things.
Locally, we got the McMahon race to look at on Staten Island.
Congressman
as he tries
McMahon,
to hold on
and
to his
really,
seat.
So much of the action in New York is really between now and mid-September, when the primary takes place, right. as in the case of the AG race, because it's such a Democratic state. So, I'll eat this dried string bean that we stole from
good.
Celeste, yeah. and then leave.
It is digesting politics. So, where do you want to go from here?
Did either of you hear what the new deputy mayor, Stephen Goldsmith, had to say about congestion pricing the other night on New York One? Did you hear this?
I missed it.
Remind us.
Well, I will say that the entire we have linked to it on the Transportation Nation blog on WNYC.org, and we have a transcript of it. But it was a fascinating, fascinating advocacy of congestion pricing. And, you know, I do want to be clear that Goldsmith said, I haven't discussed this with a mayor, and I'm not a New York State politician, and I don't know what the right thing to do would be on this issue, before he went on to say congestion pricing is terrific, it's imperative, it's very valuable, we could have avoided the MTA cuts if we'd had it.
It lives on!
And the kicker is, and I've never... One of you correct me if I am not
thinking of
this.
The kicker is he drove around in a car advocating it.
No, but the thing is that he said, well, the thing is that however you get around, you're consuming a resource. And the thing that I like about congestion pricing, and I'm paraphrasing Stephen Goldsmith now, the new deputy mayor, is that it gets people to think differently about the way they consume roads and the way they consume bridges. And this is sort of a behavioral economist, like, you know, sort of theory. Huh. And I've never heard anybody from the Bloomberg administration articulate that, although I'm sure that there are people that believe that. I mean,
consuming bridges
right,
and
right,
roadways.
Right, that it's a finite resource that you have to pay for. And this was fascinating because then he went on to talk about the garbage fee that
this
you reported on.
It sounds like Keith Carradine, walk quietly on the land. I don't know, it's a little...
I wonder where it's going. I mean, I think it's fascinating. I'm hearing it reverberate. You know, I've heard Richard Ravitch, the sort of lieutenant governor in exile, sort of, you know, talk about it. And I've heard a number of people saying it's going to come back. So
right, but was the problem with congestion pricing the support it had among the public, or is it the problem of getting it out of the Assembly conference, Democratic conference in Albany?
Both.
I think both. I mean, I mean, the polls say that everybody supported congestion pricing, but, goes back to 2005, where I had asked a question at the Democratic mayoral primary, and C. Virginia Field said, well, I support it, except for the part about paying the money. And I did.
There we go.
On that note, can we talk about Xanadu?
How
did she not win?
Okay, let's talk about Xanadu quickly, because Xanadu is something we focused on. It is a 2.2 million square foot mall that's yet to open, that was a private-public partnership between the New Jersey Sports and Exposition Authority.
I could use that ski slope right about now.
Well, and the Mills Corporation, and then the Mills Corporation ended up
indoor ski slope
dropping out of the situation, and now we have Colony Capital. Now, apparently...
Can I just say, Bob, just to interrupt for 1 second, because
I'm joking
about the ski slope, but that was the whole point, that you could go skiing in the summer, among other things,
right,
at Xanadu, a very lavish project.
And
right.
Xanadu is not a reference to Albany. This is
no.
It's actually a real place called Xanadu.
You can go, and it's quite unattractive, and the subject of uniform derision by radio disc jockeys and the public everywhere. The problem being that the two lenders that were part of the syndicate went bankrupt. All the leases have pretty much, a lot of the people have backed out. We don't know the status of the anchor tenants. Anyway, into this this swamp steps in Governor Chris Christie, who is trying to save Atlantic City, which is having a dramatic drop-off, some 30% drop-off in revenue, and also trying to deal with the fact that the state, that's right, taxpayers are actually subsidizing the horse racing industry, particularly the Meadowlands racetrack. So he goes to the 50-yard line of the new Giants and Jets stadiums, which is spectacular, and says that he wants to sell the Meadowlands for a dollar, and also unload the Izod Center, which is a concert venue that's a part of the complex, but that all of a sudden he's concerned that, you know, he feels that the public should in some way help finance the rest of the completion of Xanadu, and some $875 million are needed. Apparently there's negotiations behind the scenes between Colony Capital and Related and maybe one other national mall developer as a player. And so it's just fascinating to see, and they may actually use reconstruction and, you know, the Obama administration's program for reconstruction as part of this whole package. So it's just amazing to see, in this age of austerity, this kind of thing still come forward.
Yeah. And Bob has an article posted on our website, and the quote from Christie was astounding, which was basically like, we've spent too much money on this to not spend more.
Well, that's true. He also said that there's a $200 million rail line that has been built there. And also, to be fair to Christie, apparently the way that the contract was drafted in this private-public partnership, the private part got over on the public, and there was not sufficient hammer provisions to make sure that the developer delivered what was required. You also have the unwinding of the retail economy in a way that these folks say they couldn't anticipate.
This is a very familiar story, though, right, Ozzy, with these big public projects, which is that a lot of money gets sunk into them, they go over the budget, and then the public is either stuck walking away from hundreds of millions of dollars or spending more.
Well, Christie insists that if there's money put up in the form of these public financing through these bonds that are available through the Reconstruction Act, that he will make sure the public participates on the upside of a Xanadu. But the problem is, the big picture here is that we're in a period of time where evidently consumers are taking to heart the issue of debt and are retrenching themselves and pulling back. And it's kind of the same incoherent message you saw with Bush.
And so is Christie.
Well, right after 9/11, we had Bush say, yes, we have a war on terrorism, but go shop. And at the same time, now we're having the Obama administration say, it's a time of austerity. We really have to reinvent how we look at resources, but go out and use your credit card. So people, a common sense thing is people are pulling back from those kinds of excesses, like wanting to ski in the Meadowlands when outside it's 80 degrees.
That's where I'm going now.
Right.
Coming with me, Oz?
I will be there as long as my BlackBerry gets reception on the slopes.
All right. This is Digesting Politics. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks.
See ya.